Welcome to Let's Talk. I'd like to acknowledge the traditional owners across the country where the program's broadcast, particularly the local traditional owners, the Jagera, Yagera, Turrbal and Yugapul peoples, the Yugambeh, Mananjali, Kombamiri, Noonuccal, Quandamooka peoples. I'd also like to acknowledge elders, elders of the First Peoples of the land, and elders of more recent arrivals. Welcome to each and every one of you, and welcome to all our listeners tuned in across the country by the National Indigenous Radio Service and across the world by the World Wide Web. Welcome to you. It's great to have your company. Well, today's the first anniversary of the loss of the founder of the station, Ross Watson. It's a sad day. And he certainly left his legacy behind. There's a hell of a lot while that Murray School's still going and this radio station and things, you know. He was the founder of both of those places. And I just thought it's well worth mentioning the gap in the landscape that is very, very hard to fill, almost impossible to fill when you think about it. So, yes, we continue to remember people like Ross, but on this particular day, we remember him for his achievements and the legacy he's left us all. Today, I'm talking to Katrina Anier, the CEO of Millennium Kids, the organisation based in Perth. Katrina, welcome to the program. How are you?
Yes, I'm very well, thanks, Tiger. Thank you very much for having me on the program.
Thank you for giving us your time. I saw a short clip of one of the Millennium Kids projects called the Snake Project, and we'll get to that. But that's what led me to get my producer to try and get you on air and tell us about it, because it's different, it's innovative, and it other community, somebody else somewhere else may well think we can do that. Well, or we can do something similar. Let's have a crack at it. You guys are showing us just thinking outside the box. But tell me,
yes,
the Millennium Kids, what is the Millennium Kids?
Well, I think when you said think outside the box, I think that pretty much sums up what Millennium Kids is about. In fact, we say there is no box. what happened was in 1995, the United Nations Environment Program partnered with Eastbourne in the United Kingdom after a young woman by the name of Severin Suzuki had spoken at the Rio de Janeiro conference about sustainability and the fact that young people should be able to have a say about their future. And she had actually gone to that conference with her father, David Suzuki. She was 12 years of age, and she had stood up in front of an international audience and said that we have issues with Indigenous land ownership, we have issues with waste, we have issues with our water, and it's actually time that young people had the opportunity to have a say about what they wanted for their future. So the United Nations picked up on this and they partnered with Eastbourne, and the school that I was working at was invited to send two representatives from South Perth Primary School, and I was the teacher involved in managing this little school project. And I sent, we did a whole project with about 30 kids, and two were selected, one by the name of James and the other by the name of Sophia. They went across to England and they discovered 800 young people from around the world who were 12, 13, 14 years of age, who were not only passionate about the environment but really wanted to see things change in relation to how environmental issues were discussed and managed. What I didn't know was that there were several other young people from Australia at that conference in England, And the two young people that we sent from our school decided that they would put a list together and keep in contact with the Australian contingent when they arrived back in Australia. So after they returned in 1995, we regrouped. We met on a Sunday and we had a cake and probably hot chocolate. And we decided, you know, that we should do something as a next step. And this group of young people said that we should start an organisation run by kids, for kids, and that that we should start running our own conferences in Australia looking at environment and sustainability issues, but that the conferences would actually be run by kids. So that was 1996. So that was our beginning. And we've been working day in, day out since that point.
So the Millennium Kids, that's a not-for-profit organisation that was established then or was established since when?
Well, originally we didn't think that we would be around 20 years later. We assumed that, you know, we would run a little conference in 1996. We had six young people who met pretty much every Sunday in my back garden or their back garden. We framed what a conference would look like. We met with various people and asked them if they would support this conference process. And we partnered with our local government area, which was the City of South Perth, and we decided that we would run this two-day conference and we would invite schools from around Western Australia. What we didn't realise was that there was a lot of interest. We had schools from Brisbane, schools from Kununurra, schools wanting to come from the Northern Territory, and in fact we had a group from Malaysia who were really interested in participating. So we just said yes to everything. And we ended up running an international conference with 185 kids, with me and fellow parents, you know, sort of doing airport pickups at 2 o'clock in the morning and having kids sleeping, you know, in swags in our houses. We ran the two-day event at Perth Zoo and it was a huge success. We had the Premier attend, we had the Environment Minister attend, we had all sorts of adults on the periphery who thought that it was a marvellous idea. Not only was it about the environment, but kids were learning real skills about event management and about how to, you know, put together a press release because they were the engine room. You can imagine running a conference, but imagine a conference being run by a group of 12-year-olds writing letters, making phone calls, with some, you know, adult volunteers and parents around them doing the car pickups and the runaround and those sorts of things. What we didn't expect was that at the end the kids would review the conference and say, well, let's do it again, but next time let's make it 3 days and let's have an overnight component where everybody stays together just like you do at an adult conference so we can network. So we ran it like that under the auspices of the City of South Perth until 1999. And in 1999, the kids decided that they wanted to be a not-for-profit, that they wanted this to continue beyond themselves. And we sat down with a lawyer and we developed a constitution where the young people were the board. So our board is a group of young people who are 10 to 25 years. So they are the board. We have a council of management who manage the fiscal management and the constitution side of the legal side of the organisation. But basically the decisions in relation to the sorts of projects we run are managed by kids.
Wow.
Yeah, it's pretty exciting. It means it's a very dynamic organisation and you never know what's going to come through your door. And I suppose this is why we ended up working with Jane and the young Noongar people on this snake project.
Now, when you refer or use the term kids, we're talking about kids of across different cultural boundaries and things like that, as kids generally. I imagine.
Yeah, we are. I mean, given the name Millennium Kids was born in 1999, so we were going into the new millennium. We'd already had kids participate from South Africa. We had kids participating from Java and Malaysia. And we discussed what the name of the organisation would be. And some of our South African young people liked the idea that it was Millennium Kids, 1,000 years of kids' care. The kids didn't like the terms young people. They don't like the term youth. And so we ran with Millennium Kids, and it encompasses young people from 10 to 25 years. And we sort of coined the phrase that we are kids at heart. So I'm over 25, well and truly, but the idea is that the organisation brings people in who are willing to listen to the opinions of young people and then support them in developing projects that answer the concerns they have in their community.
What's your engagement or involvement with First Nations people, young people?
Originally, we had very much a token representation, and I suppose that was because we started in South Perth, where there are few families. There are a number of families that are on the other side of our local government area, and they participated predominantly through their schools, having them as part of the conference team. What we did was we did a review about 10 years ago, and we made a concerted effort to change the membership of Millennium Kids. And we sat down with a group of Indigenous representatives, and we looked at how we could actually have more involvement with young people, both through the school sector and in the community sector. And please excuse me if I interchange the word Indigenous and Aboriginal.
Oh, yeah, feel free. You're right.
It's a bone of contention with a lot of the First Nations people that we work with. And some of the grants that we apply for require us to use the word Indigenous, and a lot of the Aboriginal people don't want us to use it. So if I interchange it's
okay.
If I'm wearing three hats.
Yes, you use whatever's whatever term you're comfortable with.
So we really started working with a Noongar representative in Perth called Noel Nanup. I've known Noel for many, many years. And he started getting involved with us, where he would work with the schools that we were working with, doing a welcome to country, or talking about the creation story of the river, which is the Derbal Yarragon, or the Swan River, which runs right through the centre of our city. So we started off by working with some of the Noongar representatives from some of the areas that we were working in. And as we started doing that, a lot of the other representatives in the different communities started encouraging their children to participate. We got a grant from the Foundation for Young Australians in Melbourne a number of years ago to actually take a group of young Noongar people out to look at environment and sustainability through a 5-day camp. And they helped us frame the way that Millennium Kids participates in different communities in all our projects. We took these young people down south to a beautiful coastal area. We kayaked, we camped, we cooked bush tucker. Our job was really to ask them what they thought would be good from a participation perspective, and how they thought they could help frame different programs for different young people in the areas that we work. So in 2014, every Millennium Kids project that we run has Indigenous youth participation, but also we've been really pushing the Indigenous history that is in this draft Australian curriculum. It means that every school across Australia needs to look at Indigenous history in some form throughout all subjects in the curriculum, which is absolutely wonderful for us. So as an example, over the next 5 weeks, we're running five Discovering Our River conferences. All of those conferences have Noongar elders or local Noongar representatives from different parts of the river running cultural programs, looking at the history of the river, looking at their current participation along the river and what they want for the river in the future. So doesn't matter where we work. It doesn't matter whether we're working in Perth or we're working in the Great Western Woodland in the Goldfields. We work with the Nadju, we work with the Wongai. And in fact, I've just spent 2 weeks up in Mullaja working with the Gunyandi people on a river project with their kids there. So we very much have a different face to First Nation participation in 2014 than when we started in 1996. So we're really pleased that it's much more collaborative. And I think that's for a number of reasons. I think that we've built up a reputation of being collaborative, and we see very much First Nation people as key stakeholders in any environmental project that we run.
Very good. What are some of the challenges of having young people, 10 to 25, on the board? What do you need? Sure, everyone's got a story to tell, got ideas, and some young people have got a more... feel more comfortable in articulating what it is that concerns them, what they'd like to see. What are some of the challenges having young people that may not know the history of different situations or the politics, the lay of the land, the way politics
works?
What are some of the challenges for you?
Well, we started off very naively with these conferences, thinking that we could bring young people together, that they could go out and audit their community and put together a list of the challenges for the environment. That was actually really the easy part. I mean, if you take a group of young people out, as we do on a regular basis, they will they'll go down to the river and they will look at what they like about that area and what they don't like about that area. So they'll come up with issues such as, you know, the drain that comes out into the river looks as though it's dirty, we should do a water quality monitoring. Or they'll look at the beach and they'll say, there are syringes in this particular area, or we need to do a beach cleanup. Or they'll notice that the river wall is eroding, or they'll say, wow, this whole river area is just covered in grass, there are no trees, doesn't have any shade. Or they'll go to an area and say, wow, we saw all of these different birds here, but we didn't know what the birds were. Maybe there should be some sort of signage so people realise what lives in this area and why this area is important. The young people doing that audit process is the simple part. The difficult part is taking that idea and helping the kids develop a plan. So what we did about 15 years ago was we got a grant from a company, and they let us take 30 kids away for a 5-day program where we worked with kids to look at how they could develop a project. A lot of the kids had already developed a project with us, but we wanted to put together a 10-step plan that said, okay, here's the issue or the challenge that you want to address. What would you do next? So we worked with these kids to come up with a 10-step plan, which is now called the Millennium Kids 10 Steps to an Environmental Project. And we use that 10-step plan. And one of the first things they have to do is, in the area that they're working in, they have to find out who else is interested in that particular area, or who else might be interested in that project, or who else might already be working on that project. Doing that part is fairly simple. What isn't simple is a lot of the grown-ups, the stakeholder groups, don't really see a huge benefit of having young people participating and leading in projects. And what we find is that we've got some really good people at the moment who will sit down and will meet with the kids on site. They'll, you know, they'll leave their workplace, they'll come down and they'll meet with the kids, and they'll help the kids project manage, which is really what our organisation is about. We don't want the kids seeing a problem and then having someone take over and manage that problem. We want the kids to be able to actually project manage so that they build skills as young people that they can use in the future. So one of the challenges that we have is finding adult mentors who say, wow, this is amazing. You know, here we've got this group of 12-year-olds who found the drain that is causing effluent to, you know, to go in the river. They've seen that there's algae just near the area, and those kids want to track what the problem is. So instead of stepping in and saying, this is what the problem is and this is how you remediate it, we want people that say, oh, really? Well, gosh, you know, fantastic that you found that drain. What do you think you need to do next? And then the 15-year-old might say, we probably need to find out where the drain goes. So what we need is mentors who say, well, great, you could probably, you know, ring these people and they might be able to send you the drain maps. So they're the sorts of things that we want the mentors and the sponsors to understand, is that this is not a quick fix. We're not remotely interested in kids just coming along and earmarking a project and have someone else step in. We actually want the time to have the kids research the project, come back as a team and say, this is what we've identified, this is where we would like to go next. And that is that's actually a long process. It's the sort of process that government departments and industry uses in their real workplace. We want those sorts of processes to occur around youth-led projects.
All right. That certainly sounds interesting. Now, reflecting back over the 8 or so years since you've started out,
It's 28 years.
I've got my maths wrong.
20. I know it's 20. So
it's 20 years. Yeah,
it's been a long process of developing partnerships and understanding the sorts of issues that young people want addressed. But in that 20 years, it's been really clear. There are 8 areas that young people are really concerned about, and they go in this sort of order. They're really concerned about our water, both at a river level, both at a freshwater drinking capacity level. They're concerned about our oceans. They're concerned about our energy use. They're concerned about air quality and all of the air pollution issues. They're concerned about plants, and that's trees, tree planting, deforestation. They're concerned about animals, particularly animal extinction. They're concerned about waste, how we manage waste or how we don't manage our waste. And our a big area is our peace and lifestyle, the idea that we want to live in our community in peace, in harmony, in a multicultural Australia, but we also want to have good relationships with our neighbours and other people overseas. And they're really concerned about leadership. So all of our projects fit into those particular categories, and we've earmarked a number of those as our key projects, and they are water and rivers, plants through a project that the kids discovered outside Perth is the largest intact Mediterranean woodland left in the world. And they're also really interested in incorporating a Indigenous history perspective and cultural perspective into all of those projects.
All right. That certainly sounds great. Are there other organisations similar to this where young people play other focus and play a key role in decision-making and direction and stuff like this?
I think that Millennium Kids was certainly the first one in Australia. We were invited back to the United Nations on a number of occasions to present what we were doing at this United Nations Environment Programme Leave It To Us process. And we've mentored projects in Java who now run independently of us, but we still work with them. And we work in South Africa, training up groups over there. And we've also got partnerships in with projects in Malaysia, Japan, and Costa Rica. I think that probably Millennium Kids is the purest of them in that we have a youth board, and it's in our constitution that the programs have to be youth-led. I think we're probably... There have been other organisations that have developed using a similar ethos, and I think that the reason for that is that we now have... commissioners for children and young people in each of the states, and part of their mandate is to listen to the opinions of young people. And I know in Western Australia, when we our first commissioner was appointed, Millennium Kids did a lot of the consultation with young people to feed information about what kids were concerned about through to commissioner level. So we're probably the longest lived in relation to having youth-led projects. And I think, and I could be wrong, I think we're one of the few organisations that has the youth from the age of 10 through to 25 on their board. And that's part of our constitution. So it's not a committee of kids, it's a board of kids. In our constitution, we have to meet with kids and the ideas have to come from them. I know other organisations have a board, but they are adults and the kids form committees. I think that the point of difference with Millennium Kids is that our constitutional structure requires us to have young people involved in all the decision-making processes.
Hmm. Now, Katrina, tell us, there's a one particular project, tell us when it ran and how long it's come to be. That is the snake handling project. And there's a young woman there that I saw on a clip, Jane's story. Tell us Jane's story.
The snake project is an interesting one. It started through the Public Transport Authority, which is the government authority that manages transport in Western Australia. They had had a review of the different train lines in Perth, and a number of the train lines were experiencing an increase in antisocial behaviour. And the woman who was running part of the public relations section in the Public Transport Authority had actually been a volunteer with Millennium Kids over a number of years in her youth. She was in this public relations role, and on a whim she rang our office and she said, "Look, you know, we're having this curriculum put together. It's called The Right Track. And I'm wondering if you would come on board and review it." And I said that it wasn't the sort of work that Millennium Kids did, that we were interested, obviously, in young people travelling on the train and using public transport. Young people think that public transport is particularly important, but whether or not we would write a curriculum package is another thing. But we decided to meet and have a look at the package in its current form. And I sort of made a suggestion that rather than write the package, that we would take the Right Track program and we'd actually give it to a group of young people who were on the train line that was experiencing the antisocial behaviour. And we would... And we would get the young people to actually review the curriculum in its first draft. And Rachel and the Public Transport Authority decided that that was actually a really good idea, which was very exciting. So I contacted a woman by the name of Kayleen Haywood, who is a Noongar woman who works at Seven Oaks College. Kayleen and I had already worked together on one of the Noongar kids camps that I mentioned previously, and Kayleen and I sat down and said, "Wow, this is a really good opportunity for her young people to have a say about about the train line and the sorts of issues that the young people were having. So we organised a workshop at the school. We had probably about 20 kids from year 10 through to year 12 come, and we showcased the package. And we showed them a film that the Public Transport Authority was making. It was in a draft format. And the overriding comment by the kids was that there were no positive Indigenous role models in their film, that it could be spiced up with having some young people who were Aboriginal young leaders actually in the film commenting on how to travel safely. That recommendation was actually taken up by the Public Transport Authority. They thought it was a really good idea, and they reshot a whole bunch of scenes with the kids from that consultation actually being the stars of how to travel safely. How to get your Smart Rider card, how to get on and off the train, how to manage yourself, and they produced this this Right Track film, and it was sent out to all the schools along the train line, and of course it was a hit. The kids in the local school saw their brothers and sisters and cousins in the film and in starring roles. I mean, you know, it was a small education production, but it gave these young kids something, you know, to stand up and feel proud about on a train line that had quite a number of problems. And it was quite successful. The Public Transport Authority did some research on what was happening, and this message was getting out to the community that, you know, these young Aboriginal kids were leaders and, you know, they were in this film. And so we decided to take it to the next step, and we looked at what these young people could do, and we sat down with them again, and they said, you know, they'd actually like to run some of the education programs with the kids in the schools and the Ignite basketball program. They'd actually like to get out there and be part of the Public Transport Authority face, the one that said, you know, we want to use this public transport and we want to be part of the face that promotes a positive message. We also had the kids saying that, you know, some of the experiences that they were having on the transport lines were not positive. So they felt that they were being unfairly targeted. And so my job was to sit with the Transport Authority and talk with them about what sorts of problems they were having. And so we sat down with the transit officers and you know, there were two sides to the story. The transit officers were experiencing serious antisocial behaviour, and some of the kids felt that they were being unfairly targeted. So we had this, problem where, you know, both groups felt that they were the brunt of some fairly antisocial behaviour. And, I mean, we're talking about drunkenness, we're talking about kids, jumping on the train and not paying, we're talking about transit officers who, you know, are required to ask questions of these kids and hand out tickets, et cetera, et cetera. The kids decided that they wanted to meet the transit officer, but they wanted to have the power. And that was a really strong message. They wanted to be able to work with the transit officers and teach them something about their culture. And at one point, something came up about snakes, and the kids that I was working with just thought that, you know, snakes were probably the scariest thing on the planet. But if they learnt how to manage these snakes, maybe we could develop some sort of program where we did a snake handling. And then these kids went into the transit offices and taught their transit officers how to snake handle. It was a pretty loose sort of idea, and I had a big think about it because I'm not a snake handler. I'm pretty terrified of snakes. And it meant that we would all have to find some courage to overcome fear. And it really made me think, why are we experiencing this, you know, this racist behaviour? Why are we experiencing disharmony? And we sat down with the kids, and the kids said, well, you know, these people don't know us. They don't know where we come from. And the transit officers were saying the same thing. They're saying, you know, these kids get on, they see us in uniform. And there was just this climate of fear. And so we took a bit of a risk. We pitched this idea to the Public Transport Authority and they said, give it a go. So I am actually on a native animal. I'm a director of a native animal rehabilitation centre, and I sort of poked my nose into the rehab centre and I said, look, would I be able to take one of the little pythons out for a trial? It might be a good income source for the native animal centre. And I had never picked up a snake before. And I sort of went off and did a bit of a course with a guy who called Bob Cooper, actually, who does snake handling training for all the mining companies in Western Australia. And four Millennium Kids and I did this snake handling course, which was truly terrifying. We went off for a day and we did a fully fledged snake handling course where you have to look at pythons, dugites, tiger snakes, and the end result is by the end of the day you have to find them, locate them in a room, and use a hook and a bucket, and you have to pick them up with these tools and get them out of the room, put them in the bucket, and say that the room is now safe. I have never been so terrified in my entire life. But once again, it did a couple of things. It made me realise that to do the snake handling course was an adrenaline rush. It was fear, it was excitement, and it was overcoming this fear of something that I didn't understand. When I talked to the Indigenous kids, the ones that were running the train were getting exactly the same adrenaline rush, the exactly the same mix of fear. And I started thinking about this idea of what we've got to do is, rather than these kids doing this negative behaviour, if we can build this program around learning a real skill, learning to manage themselves, looking at what risk is, and do it in a safe, low-risk way where they were getting an adrenaline rush, then we would be doing something quite positive. So we ran a trial down in Mandurah at the Billy Dower Youth Centre, where there were about 25 kids, and they're all Indigenous kids and their families that used to go to this program on a Wednesday. And I went in there with my handbag and with this little snake called Spot in its bag, in my handbag. And I sat down and they all looked at me like, well, you know, what's this wadjula coming into our program for? She looks middle-aged and she looks boring as bat poo.
What has she got to offer us? Yeah,
what's she got to offer? Yeah. And I, you know, I worked in the northwest of Western Australia as a young teacher, so I've had a lot of experience with young kids. And you know, I've done the camping and whatever else, but working with these at-risk kids was a bit different. And I sat down and started talking to them, and of course the handbag started to move, as it would with a, you know, 1 metre python in it. And I said, oh, gosh, look, I wonder what's in my handbag. And I opened it up and got out the bag, and of course these kids ducked for the door or under the table, but the really rowdy ones moved forward. And they said, what have you gotten there? And I said, oh, it's just my pet. It's my friend's Spot. And I got this snake out, and they were absolutely rapt, whether they were fearful at the door or whether they were up close. Some of the kids had already had experience with snakes, and obviously pythons, non-venomous snakes, and they already had some level of skill. So they stepped up, and I talked to them about, you know, snake handling and how we could, you know, develop some sort of little workshop process where they could make some money. And that's how it started. Right. We ran the program with them about 6 or 7 times. They made a little film about it, and they built up some skills, and the Public Transport Authority said, let's do it again. So we took the snake handling project back to Seven Oaks, to Kayleen Haywood and her cohort, and we met Jane. We met Jane and Russell, and we met about 7 other Noongar kids who had been on the train. They used the train on a regular basis. They'd been in the usual scrapes where they hadn't paid bills. They hadn't paid their fare, so they were accumulating fines on the train line. And they sat down with us and they said, you know, it'd be really great if, we could learn the skills, do a 5-week program, and then we could go out and we could run these workshops and we could earn money to pay off these fines. Mm-hmm. So we said, oh, okay, this is another bow here. Let's go back to the Public Transport Authority. And they thought it was fantastic. They thought it was a really innovative way of developing some skills, to develop some positive youth leadership, but to work the train lines with these young Indigenous people, building up relationships with the transit officers whilst teaching the young kids on those train lines about the rules of the train. You know, the bottom line is, if I don't pay, I get a fine. It's not an issue of racism. It's just an issue of that is the rule. So these kids took it one step further, and this is what happens with Millennium Kids. These kids said, well, if we're going to go and run workshops, we need a shirt. We need to look like we are trained up. So we developed a model where if they did 5 training sessions in risk management, in how to handle the snakes, in communication, in leadership, they would earn themselves a shirt. And so they designed a logo, and we took them into the design company, Rare, in the city, and they sat with the designers, and they met with them 3 times before this shirt was designed. And you'll see Jane and Russell and another young man called Keezer wearing it in that little film, which is on our Facebook page. And they called themselves The Knack. And it was really funny because the knack was, you know, to do this program, you've got to have a knack with snakes. You've got to have an ability to work with people. But the knack stands for Noongar Aboriginal Community of Kids.
Oh, gee.
And you'll see that logo on their shirt. Nobody gets to wear the shirt unless they've done the 5 training programs. So we've had about 20 kids go through the program. One of the first young people who went through the program with the right track actually trained to be a transit officer. Mm-hmm. And I met with her last weekend, and she is having a meeting with us, and we really want her to become the project manager for this particular NAC program, where she becomes the trainer for the program rather than me or the other people in our office running it. So it's been a really interesting...
So there's a couple of benefits here, One is the kids are developing skills, but they're also establishing, using these snakes to build a relationship with people in authority that are always seen as the enemy.
Yeah, absolutely. And we take the kids during their school time. We run the program, the training program through their school time. But when they put that shirt on, we've run training sessions with transit officer recruits. So we go into the Public Transport Authority training buildings. We work with the transit officers before they are actually accredited transit officers. So they get to meet the kids from the train line before they're actually out there on the train line. Mm. And we've had quite a lot of positive feedback. On Saturday night just gone, we went out to Ignite Basketball, which is a big basketball program for kids on the weekend, and it draws in hundreds of kids from the community who play basketball. They have a meal and then they have some sort of workshop. So a couple of the kids that had been doing the training at Seven Oaks came out with us. They ran the midnight basketball session, and there were two transit officers there volunteering their time, and they had both done the training sessions with the NAT group, and they're also in that little film. And we were talking afterwards, and both transit officers who work the trains now said that one girl is originally from New Zealand. She said that she had never, met Aboriginal kids, and that by doing the NAC program, she had developed a relationship with a number of kids that she's now seeing on the train line, and that, you know, she can walk up to them and have a chat with them. And she said that, you know, this plays out in that the other Aboriginal kids who are on the train line are seeing a positive interaction on the train. So rather than seeing the transit officers having to do their work, you know, checking tickets and handing out, you know, fines, they're seeing a positive series of interactions on the train. And this has happened both with Kayleen, who's the older Aboriginal education officer, saying that when she's out and about on the train now, she will see the transit officers who were part of this training program out on the train line, and they'll come up to her and they'll say, "Oh, aren't you the lady that brought those Aboriginal kids out that did the snake handling?" So there's a discussion going on that was not happening before, and it's not a discussion. It's actually people who have met one another through a workshop series who are having conversations, and it's not about transit officers versus the Aboriginal kids.
So, there's a respect, relationships established and respect developed
Yeah, and I think that that's really what the kids wanted. The kids wanted to be able to run a workshop where they had more skills than the people that they were teaching. And that doesn't matter whether they're working with the transit officers. I mean, we've run this program and the judge, Dennis Reynolds, who's the head of the children's court in WA, loves it. He every time I see him, he says, "Oh, you're that millennium kids snake lady that you know, does these fantastic workshops with the kids." And Jane, who's in that film, was part of the original group. What's really interesting about Jane is that Jane did that program, and that was 3 years ago. She went and lived in another community. She went to TAFE. She trialled a few courses. And then at the beginning of this year, we got a phone call from her school. She, you know, she left school several years ago. And the school rang me and said, "Look, you know, Jane's come back to Perth. She wants to know whether she can come and do some volunteering with you." And so we had Jane in our office for 3 months. She did a series of volunteering opportunities with us. And then we were able to give her three months full-time work. She was out and about running workshops on the street with local schools. She was getting paid. We took her to Melbourne to meet the Foundation for Young Australians, and that's why that film is out there. They heard Jane's story and they said, "This is amazing. You know, fantastic. What a fabulous initiative where, you know, this idea was born out of the opinions of young people." Mm. Millennium Kids was able to pitch this to the Public Transport Authority. And here you've got Jane and Melanie, the other young woman, who've been able to get employment either as Public Transport Authority officers or working with us on training young kids on the program. And the Foundation for Young Australians said, look, this ticks all
We've got about 30 seconds left before news. What's the website where people can go to?
Okay, if you go to www.millenniumkids.com.au or our Facebook page, Millennium Kids Inc.
Look, it's a great project. I certainly thank you, appreciate your time to tell us about it. And great. Good luck with it. And let's hope you continue on with the great work.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Targa. I really appreciate the call.
Thank you. Have a great day.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye.